Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guest is Bob Ashley, Robert Ashley, who is the editor of the Durham Herald Sun. And I've persuaded him to come talk to me and to you all about what's going on, Bob Ashley, at the Herald Sun.
It was an easy persuasion. I'm flattered to be here, D.G. It's always great to be on your show and, you know, get me started. I love to talk about the world of journalism today. So,
what happened to the Herald Sun? We read that it got bought by McClatchy. What difference has that made in your life and into the lives of the readers and fans of the Durham Herald Sun?
Sure. On one level, it hasn't made a great deal of difference at all. As McClatchy and the News and Observer folks said publicly and privately at the time of the acquisition, they're committed to the Herald Sun being a distinct newspaper serving with its own identity, the Durham-Chapel Hill market for the foreseeable future. Now, the honest truth is the foreseeable future these days, and I'm using air quotes here, is, you know,
next week.
Who knows what the foreseeable future is? I told people, you know, in early December, I couldn't have said what 2017 was going to bring for sure. And, you know, the end of December after the acquisition, I couldn't say for sure. But in the short term and the midterm and as far as the eye can see, we're going to continue to be a newspaper with our own identity, our own focus. Now, on the plus side, on top of that, the News and Observer and the Herald Sun are now sharing content. I think it has deepened significantly our ability to cover state government, which I think has been a bit of a weakness for us over the long haul. It has given us some tremendous sports coverage voices and people like Luke Lecoq, Scott Fowler, whom we now use. It has enriched the News and Observer in deepening and broadening their Durham coverage with the benefit of our staff, who's covering it, you know, day in and day out, and has given them some real, I think, forceful contributions. For example, on the sports side, our coverage of NC Central University has been, I would say, without parallel among media in the Durham Triangle area. They've been able to benefit from that. They've been able to benefit from the deep sources and long experience Steve Wiseman, our sports editor, has in covering Duke University athletics. I think it strengthened both papers in terms of content. Beyond that, our website is quantum leaps ahead of where it was in terms of timeliness, in terms of depth, in terms of variety, and in terms of our focus on engaging an audience in a much more intentional and vigorous way than we were before. Now, it's also changed the look of the newspaper. And I can't tell you that that has been met with, you know, universal approval. I've probably talked to scores of readers, some of whom are simply unsettled by change, right? I get that. I mean, all of us are unsettled by change. Oh, my God, you know, the road I took to work every morning is closed for repairs. I've got to go another route. Journalists probably should empathize more than anybody with people unsettled by change. You've heard the old joke, I'm sure, about how many light bulbs – how many journalists does it take to change a light bulb? Change! With great fright and astonishment. So we're looking different. I think it's a more modern look. I think it's a more dramatic look. I think it has improved the overall appearance of the paper. Having said this, as somebody who, you know, was probably more responsible than anybody at any level for the sort of conservative, somewhat stodgy feel of the paper in recent years, because that was me. I mean, I didn't like the change. I didn't like too much drama in our appearance. And while actually some of our other papers produced by the same copy desk in Owensboro were looking more dramatic and a little bit more emphatic.
Well, just for not everybody knows, but the Herald Sun was a part of a chain which was headquartered in Owensboro. And so a lot of your support and formatting and everything was driven by the ideas of people in Kentucky.
Right. I mean, on the outward appearance, the outward to the readers, the big change is we look different. We are laid out somewhat differently. Our website looks different. Internally, from an internal standpoint, what I've told people is that, you know, in the old days, like a few years ago, even as recently as when Paxton acquired the Herald Sun in 2005.
About 12 years ago.
You know, back in those days, if you bought a paper, the new owner showed up, got the keys from the old owner and, you know, printed a newspaper the next day. The press was there. The copy desk was there. It was a self-contained unit. In modern times, for virtually every newspaper in any market of any size, particularly if there's any kind of group ownership involved, there's consolidation. So our copy desk and the copy desk for a dozen papers was in Owensboro, Kentucky. Now our copy desk and our copy desk.
But most of us don't know what a copy desk is.
Copy desk, of course. I'm not sure people in my business really know what it is in the way they used to do. Copy desk is the place where basically the final editing on stories is done. In theory, at least, the headlines are written, although a lot of the headlines are now actually generated by us as just suggested headlines, and where the pages are designed. And the, you know, the stories, which of course now exist only as, you know, ones and zeros, and digitized, the stories are assembled. The page is made, you know, on a computer to look like it's going to look in print or online when it comes out. And they push the button and send it to the press room.
So that's all done centralized by almost all at least chain papers now.
Absolutely. And so, you know, we went from – which means different publishing systems. And publishing systems are complex. You know, when I started in this business, you typed up your story on you know, thin copy paper. You rolled it up. You handed it to an editor who marked it up with a pen, who literally, if he wanted to rearrange or she wanted to rearrange the paragraphs, cut and paste it. There's a reason those things are called cut and paste, right? You sliced it up, taped it back together to rearrange it, rolled it up, put it in a pneumatic and a glass tube, put it down a pneumatic tube to a composing room where somebody set it in type, literally set it in type with a linotype machine, and sent it off to be made into plates to put on the press. Now it's all digital, and at some point someone pushes a button at the end of the line and it comes out as a printing plate. I mean, that's the first time there's any kind of physical manifestation of the work.
And where does that happen?
That happens.
It happened in Owensboro?
It happens in Garner. In Charlotte, which is East Coast copy desk for McClatchy. And the printing plant is actually in Garner. Our printing plant for the last 3 years has been in High Point.
So you really got a closer. You have a closer.
It is actually closer. So now we're printed in Garner.
Well, and what other papers are printed there?
I can't say for sure.
The News Observer.
Observer is printed there.
Printing plant freestanding, or is it owned by some newspaper, a group of newspapers?
It's a cooperative. It's the News and Observer printing plant. They opened a new printing plant a couple of years ago. It's relatively new to them too, as well as to us. They shut down their presses in downtown Raleigh at 215 South McDowell Street. I know the address because many years ago I worked there for the Raleigh Times. Then built a new plant with new presses in Garner to better serve the consolidated papers that they would be printing.
Well, let me ask you this. Yes. I want to get back to the mechanics of this, which really fascinate me, but maybe are But here's the question. Let's focus on Chapel Hill people.
Sure.
And you've described how the Durham paper has been enhanced by a lot of content from sports and from state government coverage has come from the News and Observer. Right. So that the people who don't read both papers will be getting a lot of the same content. But so the question is, why should I continue to take both papers when I'm getting half, maybe three quarters of the same content? Yeah. Why take both?
Yeah. I think three quarters is high. I think that, and it's a question I've had a lot, right? I mean, particularly since
I didn't think you would be unprepared to answer this question, but so I'm looking for a really good answer.
It's a question I get a lot. I think there are a couple of things. You know, while there is an overlap in our Durham coverage between the two papers, there is more of it in the Herald Sun. And if you really want the depth of breadth of Durham coverage, we will continue to be the greater source for that.
But then why should I take the News and Observer too?
Because while we're picking up some of their state coverage, the News and Observer has an enormously strong feature section that while we focus on arts and entertainment in Durham and Chapel Hill specifically, they cover the Triangle. And if you're interested in what's going on in bars and clubs in Raleigh, if you're interested in the cultural offerings of Raleigh and other parts of the Triangle, the News and Observer is always going to have a stronger presence on that than we are. It's a different focus. It's a regional newspaper. While we pick up we strengthen our state government coverage, there's still nobody that can equal the News and Observer. And I should, by the way, throw into this mix the Charlotte Observer, right? The News and Observer and the Charlotte Observer have long benefited from their partnership.
But they're not in the same, not competing for the same readers.
But we also are able to draw on the Charlotte Observer's coverage, for example, of state government. But, you know, Under the Dome is still Under the Dome. I mean, the depth and the granular quality of state government coverage in the News and Observer, for reasons of space, for reasons of
mission, can you think of another reason? I mean, here's the – for anybody you want to select, the question is – given the the partnership now between the News and Observer and the Durham Herald Sun, and those other demands on my budget, and if I'm taking both papers, I'm always thinking, why do I need both of these? And so you're answering the question: one is state.
And there may be people who make the decision that they don't need to. I mean, there are people who have in Durham, for example, who've subscribed to the News and Observer again because they have broader state government coverage. I think our national coverage right now is probably fairly equal because of space limitations in both papers. But I think that's, you know, there are going to be people who may say, hey, you know, I don't need to be getting that second subscription in order to get more state coverage. I'm really not interested in the cultural information in Raleigh. I can just get the Herald Sun. Likewise, there are probably going to be some people, particularly maybe on the fringe of our market, for whom the, you know, they're really not that interested in Durham News, but it was the local paper, so they got it. They may choose not to be a second buy. I think it's going to affect.
Well, I want to talk some more about that, and particularly as maybe Chapel Hill fits into that fringe of both towns after we take a break. And if you join us late, I'm visiting with Bob Ashley, who's the editor of the Herald Sun. We're talking about the changes in his paper and our situation here in Chapel Hill with respect to the News Observer and the Herald Sun. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Bob Ashley. If you did join us late, he is the editor of the Durham Herald Sun, and he's explaining to me some of the consequences or some of the features that have been a part of the common ownership between the News and Observer and the Herald Sun. In fact, looking at your masthead, your publisher works in Raleigh. Is that right?
Yes. Our publisher is Sarah Glines. She is the publisher of the News and Observer, of course, and has been for less than a year. I don't remember exactly the time frame on that, and became our publisher upon the moment of the acquisition.
So you work for her?
I do. And I work very closely with John Drescher, who's the editor in Raleigh. You know, it's a small world. John and I have known each other for a long time.
Let's just be honest about this. You're a branch now of the News and Observer.
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. I mean, again, we continue to have our own identity. But the fact of the matter is they have, you know, they have the printing plant. they have the, you know, they have the far larger staff and footprint and presence. And, yeah, I mean, I work closely with John. I work closely with Sarah. I work closely with other people on the various desks at the News
Which
Observer.
Of you or John Drescher, the editor of the News Observer, or you, Bob Ashley, the editor of the Herald Sun, has primary responsibility for providing news to to the readers of those papers who live in Chapel Hill? Who's going to be the entity that is primarily responsible for covering Chapel Hill?
And the honest answer to that is we're still working that out. Chapel Hill, for the News and Observer, had a specific presence with Mark Schultz and his staff who produced the
Chapel Hill. Mark is the editor of the Chapel Hill News.
Of the Chapel Hill News and the Durham News. And Mark and Tammy Grubb, who was their reporter primarily responsible for
who was or is?
Primarily responsible. You know, have a little bit of a hybrid relationship right now between – they're in our newsroom. They've moved into our newsroom.
So the Chapel Hill News operates out of Durham now.
It does.
With you in your same offices?
In our same offices.
And does Mark now work for you again? I mean, does he now work for you again? That reading your masthead.
Right.
You're at the top. It's sort of in alphabetical order. Tammy Grubb is on your newsroom, is in your newsroom. Mark Schultz is in your newsroom. Is it a merger of the Chapel Hill News and the Durham Herald Sun?
Sort of. And I I'm not trying to be evasive on this. We're working through this, and there is a certain amount of ambiguity right now mm-hmm. that I think we're all comfortable with. I mean, we are not a hierarchical place, right? We have never been, at least in the time I've been there, particularly hierarchical. And we don't spend a lot of time worrying about titles and worrying about, you know, strong lines of authority, particularly right now as we're sort of working this through. There's a lot of dotted lines going on right now. In terms
so
of
we're
that.
Privileged to live right. in an era of change that has an impact on our opportunity, our options for keeping up with right. local news.
It does, and we're working that out and how that works. I mean, again, Mark Schultz, who you know, this is a small world. Mark Schultz, Tammy Grubb, and Virginia Bridges are all people that I have worked with previously when they were at the Herald Sun. So it's not like we're strangers thrown together. And Mark continues to play a strong role and will continue to play a strong role, particularly in our coverage of Chapel Hill in Orange County. At the same time, again, we're 10 feet apart. I have an office that I spend almost no time in. 90% of my time is spent in a cubicle in the newsroom where Mark Donovan, our metro editor, sits right across from me. Mark Schultz sits next to him. And Cliff Bellamy, who handles
so
the features
well,
coverage.
So help us with that.
Side.
So you've right. got all of these right. people who are on your masthead, some assigned to the Chapel Hill mm-hmm. News, some assigned to the Herald Sun, and maybe some also – and all of them providing content for the News and Observer as well.
Right.
And so you're sitting there and a story comes in. Mm-hmm. You're the editor, right. and it's in Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tree that falls on Franklin right. Street, and you say, how are we going to cover this? Or what? How does that story develop?
Collaboratively. I mean, we're basically talking back and forth. We're pretty good example. Tammy Grubb was off the other day. There was a court case that was important to us in Orange County, and our court reporter Colin Warren Hicks picked up the story. Right? That's not. I mean, for the last 3 months, that has not been unusual to have that kind of
picked up the story for whom? For the News and Observer, for the Durham Herald Sun, for the Chapel Hill News,
all of the
for
above.
The Durham News,
all of the above.
But why do you need all of them to cover me?
Right.
Or to provide me?
Well, first of all, it's important to note that the Chapel Hill Herald and the Durham Herald have ceased publication.
No more.
We truly did not need. You're right. I mean,
there were some of your crossword fans who puzzled fans.
Exactly, yeah.
With
the crossword, the crossword. So we really didn't need
so if you missed
four
your,
publications doing those two things.
In the last couple of weeks right. – if you're a subscriber to the Herald Sun, mm-hmm. you might have noticed that the Chapel Hill News, which had been a part of that Sunday paper, right. is not there anymore, and it's not coming back.
Right, and here's – right. It's no, the Heralds, the Chapel Hill and Durham Heralds are not coming
so
back.
So that vehicle right. for Chapel Hill mm-hmm. content, one of the results of the, quote, new right. association is that's gone.
Right. And – it's a couple of things that are important to note there. One is that neither of those publications, either the Herald publications, had ever been particularly – well, certainly in recent years, the Chapel Hill Herald had struggled financially, right?
What do you mean financially? I mean, you just –
didn't have much advertising. I mean, here's the challenge in Chapel mm-hmm. Hill, right, as I see it. And I came to this game late in a sense. By 2005, the competition to cover Chapel Hill – and plant flags here had been going on for some years.
Between the News
Between
Observer
the
and the Herald Sun.
And the Herald Sun. There's a reason, as it turns out, that Chapel Hill has
well,
always
and
had
excuse me, and when you yeah. came, the, mm-hmm. maybe I'm right. not sure. Now I can't remember, but at least until right. recently before Paxton took right. over the Herald Sun, the Chapel Hill News was an independent player in competing. Right. With you all, or with the Herald Sun and the News right. Observer to provide an independent source of coverage. That
exactly.
that ended when the News Observer acquired it.
Right. And yeah, the Chapel Hill, you know, I knew the Chapel Hill News when and I knew Orville Campbell when it was the Chapel Hill Weekly, right?
Or, we're not going to go
Chapel
back there. I mean,
became
one
the
day,
Chapel Hill newspaper, right?
One
exactly.
day I want you to come and tell
right,
us
exactly.
about the
so basically in a sort of a kaleidoscope way, I have a little bit of a glimpse of the history of trying to publish a newspaper in Chapel Hill. Here's
well,
my sense.
If Jim right. Hebner were with me, he would also say, don't forget the Village Advocate.
Don't forget the Village Advocate. Exactly. Don't forget the Village Advocate. So here's sort of the challenge as I see it. And I'm not a numbers guy. I'm not a business side guy, right? I'm an editor who has, by necessity, a fairly deep interest in the business side. the retail base in Chapel Hill is not particularly deep or broad, right?
So you're at the advertising base.
So the advertising base is thin.
There's a services business, isn't it? But they don't. Those guys.
But my sense of it, and again, I came into it by 2005. This has been going on for a while. My sense is that there just wasn't an advertising base to sustain a daily newspaper, in 7-day a week newspaper in Chapel Hill in Orange County. We tried. The News and Observer tried. Orville tried in the years before that, and never quite made it. And then the newspaper, the recession hit in 2007, 2008. The collapse of print advertising that's afflicting the entire print industry was picking up speed, and we found it increasingly difficult to sustain the Chapel Hill Herald. It was 7 days a week 12 years ago when we basically pulled the plug on it several weeks ago. It was down to 1 day a week with not much in the way of advertising. And the other issue for those, to be honest about it, for the Newses and the Heralds, is they served as a jacket to deliver advertising inserts to non-subscribers. Frankly, leaving
that was when you were delivering to non-subscribers.
Right.
And that did you cease that sometime?
The Durham Herald's never had much of a non-subscriber distribution. Never. That was why it made sense to say, okay, we don't need four of these. The two that have the least financial bearing are the Heralds, the Chapel Hill and the Durham Herald. The Newses have a very strong non-subscriber base. They're very effective, as I understand it. Again, I'm not part of the News and Observer.
So the Chapel Hill News, which is still being published.
Right. The Chapel Hill News has a very strong non-subscriber base and, in fact, is mostly right now being distributed to non-subscribers. It's a way of getting advertising material into the hands that advertisers want to reach of people who don't subscribe to the print paper.
So
that's a major part of the
Schultz, the editor, and Tammy Grubb, they're working with you. How are they putting out the Chapel Hill News? And can we I've noticed that more and more of the Chapel Hill News content it looks like it's being shared with the other News and Observer local papers, and that there's some kind of evolution of that paper into being something standardized throughout the community.
And I'll be out of my depth if I talk about the overall strategy for the community newspapers. I mean, I'm conversationally aware of it, but I don't know in detail. I know that my colleagues at the News and Observer are trying to sort out exactly the best way to handle that array of community newspapers in a time of we have to be really smart about how we're allocating our resources. And I don't know where that's going. I'm not privy to those conversations.
I need to take a break, but I don't want to – the original question was if I had to choose between the two options, which now are essentially News and Observer and Herald Sun to get my morning news which one am I going to choose, or are you all going to decide that one of those news delivery mechanisms is going to be the one that that you all decide to focus on and maybe give up the other?
I can't predict the future next week, much less next year or the next 5 years. But in the near term,
you're going to have both options.
We're optimistic that people will make the choice that better suits them. Between taking the Herald Sun or the News and Observer or both. And we're going to continue to offer both products and offer them aggressively and energetically, and we'll see where this shakes out.
We're visiting, if you join us late, with Bob Ashley, editor of the Durham Herald Sun, talking about he's talking about my future. That's what I'm worried about. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to ask Bob to visit with us about the future of the journalism business. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Bob Ashley, who is the editor of the Durham Herald Sun, is now engaged and has helped us understand better the I don't want to say turmoil, but the exciting developments in terms of how the Durham Herald Sun is changing, how the News and Observer is changing, and how some of the outlets, Chapel Hill Herald and Chapel Hill News, how all this is going to have an impact on us. But, Bob, in the midst of mm-hmm. all this, the basic question that all of us have throughout the world, I guess, but throughout Chapel Hill and this area is, can these entities survive economically as they're structured now? And if so, how?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we think so. I mean, you had just before the break had sort of referenced to, or maybe during the break referenced the future of journalism sort of broadly. As some people listening may know, and as you know, I tried to retire about 6 years ago, failed miserably at the idea, went to work for a nonprofit for a while, and then came back to the newspaper after about 15 months away. So what I tell people is I escaped from journalism and voluntarily came back.
And as a guy who's well set to retire.
So, right. So that says something about what I think about the future.
So you, this is maybe one day just on your individual story, which is quite interesting. But the first piece of it is that you think that there is a future, a sustainable future in journalism. And everybody else is saying, no, this print journalism is the past. When those of us who are used to growing up with it are gone, it's all over, boys. And you're come back to participate in print journalism?
Let me reframe the question a little bit. Because while I think there is a tremendous future for journalism as I know it and love it, which is, you know, taking the curiosity and skills of smart, committed people and relaying news and information and holding public officials accountable and explaining complicated decision points to an audience remains incredibly important. And while many people may be getting their fake news from odd websites or their Twitter feeds or their friends, I think there remains and will remain forever an audience that wants their news and information vetted, corroborated, and curated by people whose full-time jobs is paying attention to that. So I think there's a great future for that. The question is, how are we going to deliver it tomorrow, next month, and probably most important, 5 years from now?
And how are you going to pay for it?
And how are we going to sustain that? And, you know, McClatchy's strategy, as I've come to understand in the last 4 months, I mean, I'm hardly a veteran in the last 4 months, is that the future is digital. It's not a great revelation, but the future is digital, and we really have no choice strategically but to identify and execute a plan to make that financially sustainable. Right? And I think
excuse me for interrupting you, but does that mean you're conceding that print journalism can no longer be looked to sustain the operation that you described?
Here's the dilemma we're in. Here's the dilemma almost every newspaper I'm aware of is in. The bulk of our revenue still comes from print advertising. That's a shrinking bulk.
85%, 90%, or 50%?
I don't know the number. I don't know the breakdown, but I would say roughly it's still probably north of 50%.
North of 50%, but shrinking. Is that the
– right.
As a percentage of where your money's coming from. Well, how can you okay.
So what we're finding, and I think this is the wisdom of McClatchy's strategy and sort of the recognition of the existential necessity of the strategy, is that we are aggressively growing our digital revenue. Now, you can really talk about I don't know the numbers, but you can make pretty good percentage gains when you're coming off a low base, right? So, I mean, there's pretty strong
percentages are going up, but the person who's careful says, okay, but that's not a lot of money.
Here's the key number as I understand it. I don't know these numbers in detail. I don't know them. You know, I haven't looked at the spreadsheet. What I know is that we have said recently that corporately and I think at the end of this is specifically true, is that our print revenue loss is – almost exactly offset in the last year or two by our digital gain. Now, you may look at that and say, okay, you know, that's a wash. That's not getting you where you need to be. But I think what that says is that we've stemmed the tide of, oh, my God, you know, the sky is falling because this revenue is going away and we aren't replacing it. I mean, the fact remains that online advertising still brings in, you know, unit for unit, less money than print advertising. But that's changing. And we're developing, my colleagues are developing, again, I'm only tangentially aware of this, my colleagues are developing very sophisticated strategies for selling to digital.
That's what I'm really interested in. So I want to take a break, and then I want you to come back and explain to us how you're going to make that digital, how you're going to sell stuff that you're providing people who are willing to pay something for something valuable, what the valuable stuff is and how you sell it.
Sure.
And we'll talk about that with Bob Ashley, editor of the Herald Sun, after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Bob Ashley, the editor of the Durham Herald Sun. And Bob, when we took a break, you were getting ready to explain to me the mystery that I just can't understand, and that is how you all in the newspaper business see how you're going to figure out a way to use the digital to make money to replace all of this print advertising which sustained you in the past. How are y'all going to do it?
Sure. I will oversimplify this in part because I want to keep it simple, and in part because if I get really deep into the weeds, I get unsure of my specific knowledge. But here's in the broad brush, I think, the issue for us. There is no question that advertisers are fleeing print for other mechanisms because their audience, I mean, their customers are fleeing, right, or their potential customers. So what we have to do is demonstrate to advertisers that the people they want to reach, they can reach through our digital operation. That means showing strong, demonstrable, certifiable growth in the engagement people have with any given story, feature, piece of our digital operation. So much of our effort is, I think, appropriately geared toward not just doing, you know, really good journalism, which I think we do. I think the Herald Sun does, the NNO does, I think all of our colleagues in McClatchy do, is making sure that people come to that, engage with, consume that information and that product. That's not going to happen if we put up a website that says heraldsun.com, you know, and wait for people to click on our homepage and scroll through the you know, the stories on the website. It's not how people are coming to it anymore. You know, I'm going to hold this up. The phone I'm holding in my hand is one of the things, the smartphone I'm holding in my hand is one of the things that's had tectonic impact on the way people are accessing media. So, or accessing information. Most of the people, and I don't know the numbers, but it's pretty high, most of the people who come to a story on our website or the NNO's website, particularly the NNO's website, it's growing for us because we're just now beginning to focus on this, don't go to newsandobserver.com and then, you know, read the stories. They are finding, they're coming to the story through search engines, through social media, through Twitter, their Twitter feed from friends who are recommending, seeing a story and recommending it. Facebook is a major driver of traffic. And I'm only beginning to understand that the Facebook empire, colossus, whatever you want to call it, is constantly tweaking its algorithms for what will result in a given story being relatively high on somebody's newsfeed so that they'll see it and then go to the story.
Well, let me ask you this, just to help me. I promised I wouldn't interrupt, but now I've got to. How are you going to make money if somebody on Facebook, how do you get the money, and then who gets the cut?
As long as we can demonstrate that there's heavy traffic to our content, then it makes sense for an advertiser to want to be adjacent to or on our content.
So if I'm an advertiser, I want to say, show me the hit. Show me how many hits. Is the measurement in hits rather than circulation now? Is that sort of what?
Hits are important, absolutely. Page views, unique page views, anything that demonstrates the volume of your traffic and the engagement of your traffic, we can measure.
So
we
what you're doing, again, right, if I'm right, selling
right. – widgets. Right.
Selling either ads for the News Observer or Durham Herald Sun, or I'm selling presence on the website of either one of them. When I go in with my little notebook, I'm saying, here's what I can deliver, and it is hits. Yep. People are using this, and we can give you better communication with your potential customers than we were able to do on the print journalism.
Well put. I mean, there are really sort of two steps. One is we've got to absolutely make sure that there's value to our content to advertisers, and that value is because people are going there to read it or view it, right? Because video is a big attractor of traffic. Video will bring people to a story quicker than almost anything.
So
that's
again,
one step.
Then
we have to, and again, I'm out of my league here because I don't deal with this directly, but we have to make sure our sales force is trained and skilled and has the tools to demonstrate that value to advertisers and to help them design web advertising strategies and presence that will engage our readers with their message and ultimately drive business to them. I mean, without getting too oversimplified, that's the mission. So I think where we really are gaining traction is in investing heavily, both in terms of resources and in terms of focus and training on the revenue side, training our sales force to sell to that product. And on my side, right, the content generating side, making sure that I and my colleagues fully grasp how to leverage this social media force that's what's bringing people to our content to bring as many people as possible. So that means, actively reporters are engaged in making sure that they're using social media to help draw people to their work and to their colleagues' work, and to make sure we have somebody who is curating our Facebook page with great intentionality to make sure that our really good journalistic work is getting
to
exposed
spread the word
to people on the platforms where they're going to find it, which is not, frankly, just posting it on the web and hoping they come. It's in helping them get there through the social media that is very much a part of their lives and very much a part of their really basically their worldview, because that's where they are.
Well, Bob, this is really informative for me.
Right.
Let me say this and then you critique it.
Right.
But it is fair to say that 10 years from now, you might not care if I have stopped my subscription to the Herald Sun if I'm just I'm going to Herald Sun stories on the web one way or another all the time and reading the advertising that pays the way, just as it was 20 years ago when I was reading the Herald Sun and the print advertisers were. You won't care that I've got a print because your income's coming from the web.
Right. I'm not sure that saying we don't care is quite the right way to characterize it. I think the issue is not whether we care or not. That's what's happening. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's where
– Well, you're preparing for that eventuality.
Right.
Is that
– heaven only knows. I've talked to many, many wonderful, wonderful people in the last 3 weeks who are longtime print subscribers who have been getting the Herald Sun since it was the Durham Morning Herald and since it was the Durham Sun before it shut down, who cannot conceive that it adds any value to their life when I tell them, oh, I know that story wasn't in print, but it's online. I know that. I also know that as painful as it is, if we can maximize our ability to attract that audience that is out there on the web, whether it's coming to us or not coming to us, that's where it is. It's in the digital world. If we can attract those people to our site, and I hate this word, but I use it a lot anyway, and monetize that in a way that drives our business, then we can perhaps prolong the period of time. We can also continue to provide a print product for those people who want that.
Good.
Is it forever? Probably not. I mean, it's not rocket science. There are large cities in this country. Huntsville and New Orleans come to mind fairly quickly. Huntsville and New Orleans, Louisiana come to mind, where there is not a seven-day-a-week print newspaper. Mm. There are still seven-day-a-week print newspapers in, most of the major North Carolina cities, including, I might add, Charlotte, Raleigh, and Durham. McClatchy is, I think, sort of privileges and benefits from owning the newspapers in three of the four largest cities in the state. That's not a bad place to be positioned in 2017.
Well, listen.
And not just own the newspapers, but own the news product, whether it's digital, whether it's print.
I'm beginning to understand, and I wish we had more than the time, but you've opened my eyes and given me a whole new set of questions that I hope you'll come and talk to me about sometime soon. Bob
Always
Ashley, thanks so much for visiting with us.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
And thanks to all you all for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.